via Zoom. It is America's number one bi-coastal podcast featuring two annoying Jews on the West Coast. Your host and moderator, I am annoying Jew number one. My name is Evan Moody. On the East Coast, annoying Jew number two, his name, Phil McCracken. Phil, how the hell are you, my friend?
I leaned over.
Oh, man, that's so funny. I'm doing just fine. How are you? Nice to see you.
Doing fine. Lovely day out here. Hot out here in Phoenix. I don't even know how hot it is.
Well, it's 1:30 here, so that means I have not been outside yet, so I really don't know what it's like.
Yeah, it's so hot that when I take Braxton, puppy Shango is on the floor sleeping during this podcast, but when I do take him out, I have to pick him up and carry him to the grass because the cement pavement is so hot.
What did I see? I saw a picture of you with two dogs.
Oh, that was last weekend. We went to watch my girlfriend Marie. Her brother and his wife went away for like a weekend. So we were, we were watching the kids. So they have two. They have two other dogs.
I was like
three dogs.
I was like kids. Evan's having a threesome. I'm like, this is hot. Nice.
Yeah. Well. I actually got up early on Monday because we stayed overnight on Sunday, so I was going to drive back to our house to get ready for work. It's 4:30 in the morning, and the kids are all talking. And they're like, Blackston came in the room and woke us up, kissed us and woke us up, and I watch the TV at 4:30 in the morning. I'm like, I got to go.
So, you're like, that's it. All right, enough.
I'm expecting a nice, quiet house, and bunch of kids talking. So, what's going on, Gru? Anything, any news to report this week?
Not a whole lot. It was a normal week. Everything going swimmingly. Our bowling season is up and running. We're 2-0 so far, defending our Tri-County Championship.
Do you guys wear like really cool bowling shirts? Or
we have them. We don't necessarily wear them, but we had T-shirts made last year. We're actually proud of them. We have it just says "Welcome to the Split Show," and it's like a panther like exploding through two pins and everything. It's kind of cool. So that was from last year. This year we're toying with like no split. Or deep split, or plays on split and shit.
We're gonna take a journey into the Quiet Place universe. First, let's take a look at the original that started it all, A Quiet Place. Quiet Place is a 2018 American horror film. I would say it's more of a sci-fi kind of horror film directed by John.
I found it pretty scary.
Yeah, Jim from The Office. You watch The Office at all? Anything?
No, but I am familiar. But
what?
That doesn't mean I don't like The Office. I have seen.
Gru doesn't watch The Office.
I have seen episodes of The Office, and it is very funny. I just haven't. It's not one of those that I've seen every show of. But
oh, dude,
very familiar.
It's a funny show.
Oh yeah, I know that. You know what? It's weird that I don't watch it because I'm a big Steve Carell fan. Rainn Wilson, all those guys, they are very funny. And Krasinski, I'm very familiar with Krasinski's work. And he's a very talented guy. So it's a show that I absolutely should watch, but for whatever reason, I don't. Maybe I will.
Yeah, you got it. You should.
I think I need to watch more TV. I think that's that's what's missing in my life.
Well, notwithstanding, when I moved here, I was like, I moved here, I had a little apartment, and, I just had cable, and
right.
I met Marie, and then she came over with the Chrome, and it hooked me up and gave me her Netflix.
Ooh.
And we started watching.
So that's why you get along so well. She really brought it to you.
Well, I started watching the show, and boy, we had a blast. That's probably the last television show I've watched, front to back. Although I did see on YouTube today a trailer that Seinfeld is moving to Netflix.
There's a new show that I discovered. It's about these three African American teenagers just growing up in kind of like Southside Chicago. One is like he's like a fat kid. He's named like after like a TV rerun kind of thing, and it's called like What's Happening, like something like that. Like it's real, like it's very, it pushes the envelope. All right, this joke is way past its expiration date.
I love the one with the Doobie Brothers. That's the one episode I love. I love
the you know what the name of that episode is? Doobie or Not Doobie. That's literally the name of the episode of that show.
Well, Gru, it was written by Brian Woods, Scott Beck, from a story conceived by Woods and Beck. The plot revolves around a father, Kaczynski, and a mother, his real-life wife, Emily Blunt, who struggle to survive and raise their children in a post-apocalyptic world inhabited by blind monsters with an acute sense of hearing. Beck and Woods grew up together in Iowa and had watched numerous silent films in college, began working on a story that led to the film. They used their experience growing up close to farmland as the setting, including a grain silo as a place considered dangerous in their upbringing. Beck and Woods began developing this story in college. In July of 2016, Krasinski read their spec script and was hired to direct and rewrite the script in March of the following year. The film drew inspiration from Alien and No Country from Old Men, two really good films. Filming took place in upstate New York from May to November of 2017. Grew yet another post-apocalyptic, say that fast 10 times, setting for a movie. So many films, so many big popcorn films have had this setting, Mad Max and beyond. Why do you think that this is such a great spot for films to mine?
I think because it's an endless, you could tell endless stories with it. Like there's, you know, in when you're trapped by the trappings of reality, you know, you're limited. Here in a post-apocalyptic, you're right, it's not easy to say. In a post-apocalyptic world, you could take the story and the characters wherever you want, and the possibilities are endless. So that's one thing that, you know, the future is something that interests everybody, and the possibilities, you know, it's always, if you do it right, it's always a lot of fun to see the imagination of what life and things might be like after humanity is wiped out. You know, or all but wiped out. So I think it's something that will never be unpopular if done right. And I think these movies kind of do it right.
Post mimos, but Gru, A Quiet Place is a production of the Platinum Dunes. It was produced on a budget of $17 million. Surprised by that number, $17 million.
Me too.
Sound about. No, I'm asking you. I don't know. I like to ask you. I sprinkle in some questions for
it
you.
Seemed,
you surprised by that number?
Yes, it seemed to me that the first one was made on a shoestring, and rightly
really?
So. That's what it seemed, because there's no other actors in it besides the family. I think there's one. I think there's one other character in there briefly, but it's basically just the few of them. So that saves a lot of money on cast salaries, and they're really in a very remote location. So, you know, basically the money went into the special effects, I would say. So $17 million seems like a lot, but it's healthy. The movie does look good. Definitely looks real. The creatures look very real and very, they're kind of creepy. You know?
Do salaries make up the big chunk of a movie's budget?
For someone like Krasinski and Emily Blunt, two very established and well respected actors and producers in the movie business, yeah, I mean they probably, I would say each of them on a normal movie would command like, you know, $5 to $7 million. But you know, they obviously took a pay cut on this one, but this is also, they're producing it. Like they are the ones behind it. So obviously they're going to take a pay cut because it's something, obviously a passion project that they want to get made. But yeah, cast, look, you know, like a guy like, I don't know, a guy like Leonardo DiCaprio gets like $30-35 million a movie. And when you've got a budget of $100 million, which is normal nowadays, that's a third of the budget goes to one actor. You know, so yeah, when you have, but you know what? I used to be like, salaries like that are so obscene. Yet I've lately gotten an appreciation for the amount of talent that it takes to do the things that some of these people do. So I don't really balk at those big salaries anymore for whatever reason. It's just like even like I know I'm getting a little bit off topic, but even like
yes you are, but, yes you are.
But even like, did you ever see the movie Seabiscuit?
No.
Oh, you never. All right, so that'll make no sense to you then. But just seeing like William H. Macy does some things in that movie in a very small part. That just it doesn't seem like anybody else can do, and like you have to think like he must have been paid a lot of money for a very small amount of screen time, but he just eats it up, you know. So it's like I look at things a little bit differently. I recognize the talent, and these people like Emily Blunt is an Oscar nominated actress, and John Krasinski has a great has a long list of accomplishments. So they're, you know, they earn their money. Absolutely. So, you know, I don't really balk at the salaries anymore.
Another interesting
thing. All right, wake up.
Another interesting. Well, I mean, as you're thinking this, I'm thinking like, you know, back in the day, we just goofed on actors. Now you're like, I respect their craft, and
I didn't say that. I appreciate the talent and work that, like, look at, like, I'll give you one more example just to illustrate it.
Oh, okay. Lord, he's taking us down.
Bohemian Rhapsody. All right.
Okay.
What that guy was able to do. You know, I watched the behind-the-scenes documentary that chronicled his becoming Freddie Mercury kind of thing. I'm like, holy crap, I can't believe the talent that it takes to do what that guy did. Like, it's a special kind of talent. So you know, even though, look, yeah, the money that they make is ridiculous, but at the same time, in many ways, they earn it. I have to hand it to them. In a lot of, you know, of course, there are a lot of cases where that's bullshit.
But,
well, you asked the question, so I'm answering it.
He goes, and then, but then, I feel like he's done that. He goes, but then, well, I have a great joke in my mind about Bohemian Rhapsody, but I won't say it.
Oh, come on. You can't do that.
I don't want to be canceled. Would you be surprised that after developing the script, this was considered as a potential fourth installment of the Cloverfield franchise?
No, because it does share a lot of, thematically, it does share a lot of, I could see it being morphed into that. But I could also see it being morphed into other franchises, you know, specifically.
Like what?
You know what? I thought of Alien. Like it really seemed to me like it's in the Alien family, you know.
Perhaps.
Like especially in, well, I know we'll get there, but especially the second one. But we'll get there.
We'll
with
talk
that.
About
but
that.
Yeah, but we'll I could definitely see it. You know, being developed. You know, a lot of changes would have to be made, obviously, but it falls in line with the Cloverfield thing, without a doubt.
Quiet Place premiered at the South by Southwest Festival on March 9th, 2018. Was released in the U.S. on April 6th, 2018. Before I get to the cast, Gru, did you see the trailer for A Quiet Place before it opened? Any initial
Yes.
thoughts? Did it catch your eye?
It definitely did, and I remember seeing the trailer being like, yeah, this is something I could definitely get in, but was this not released during COVID?
Not A Quiet Place. The first one was not released. Was
not
before
so
COVID.
Maybe I just, I don't know why I would. This seems like the kind of movie that I remember seeing the trailer. Why wouldn't I have gone out to see it? I think I was just like tired of going. I just didn't. The first stretch there, I just didn't like going to the movies anymore. I don't know why.
See, my thing is, I never thought you to be a big sci-fi fan. I am.
I don't see this as sci-fi. I saw it as horror, and I like horror.
Okay.
You know, to me, I like sci-fi. I'm a huge Star Trek fan. I'm a big Star Wars guy.
You're, That's true.
You know, I like Alien and Aliens and all that stuff. You know, it's not my first. I like familiar sci-fi. You know, try to hit me with something new, and I'm not interested in it. But to me, this isn't sci-fi. This looked and is to me horror, and I'm always good. I'm always up for a good horror movie.
Andrew, the cast of A Quiet Place was Emily Blunt as Evelyn Abbott, John Krasinski as Lee Abbott, the father. Emily was Evelyn as the mother. Millicent Simmons as Reagan Abbott, who was Lee and Evelyn's teenage deaf daughter, and the actress is deaf in real life.
Mm-hmm.
Noah Jupe as Marcus Abbott, the second child and eldest son of Lee and Evelyn, and Cade Woodward as Bo Abbott, Lee and Evelyn's four-year-old son. I got some notes here. Gru, the crew avoided making noise during the filming. They used diegetic synchronized sounds so that the sounds were amplified. This was inspired by animal echolation, such as employed by bats. The sound of feedback normally avoided by sound editors was woven into the story at a loudness level that would not bother audiences too much. Gru, sound plays such a major role in this film. You are a film guy. Thoughts on perhaps not a unique concept with sound, but a unique way to integrate sound into the cinematic experience. What was your thoughts about A Quiet Place and the whole deal with sound?
Well, yeah, I mean, for them to get the amount of dead silence is not easy. As someone who's been on some sets before, and what they did, like especially with the girl, the deaf girl, and the waves, you know, in the feedback, that was very, very well done, very realistic, and just like the silence was deafening, and that's a very hard thing to pull off in a movie. Like, imagine sitting in. Did you see the movie in the movie theater?
I did.
So you sat in the movie theater, and you're literally, for long stretches of time, it's dead silent in there. And it's, you know, for a movie to be able to pull that off and make it sound like, I don't know how to describe it. It was a very surreal kind of feeling, and it added to the tension. And that's a tough trick to pull off, and they pulled it off very well. They pulled it off better in the first one than they did in the second one, I think.
All right, well, hold off your thoughts on that, my friend. We're going to get to that. What I would add is, what you sort of hit upon it, was I think the quietness, the lack of sound, and the way it was amplified, sort of this ambient noise, actually added to the tension and the horror.
Yes.
Like, it was... Usually you have music to fill in, and I mean, you were not distracted. Everything was focused.
Everything counts. Every sound counts.
Yeah, here we go.
Right?
Another Andy Gruism. Everything counts. Not a wasted moment.
Yeah, there you go.
No energy was expelled. Gru, the characters communicated in American Sign Language, ASL, to avoid making sounds, so the filmmakers hired deaf mentor Douglas Ridloff to teach ASL to the actors and to be available to make corrections. They also hired an ASL interpreter for deaf actress Millicent Simmons so that spoken and sign language could be interpreted back and forth on the set. Simmons grew up with ASL, and she helped teach her fellow actors to sign. She said, in the movie, where we've been signing together for years and years, so it looks fluent. So it should look fluent. She observed that each character's use of sign language reflected on his or her motivations. The father had short and brief signs, which showed his survival mentality, while the mother was more expressive as part of wanting her children to experience more than survival. Krasinski said that Simmons' character used signing that's very defiant. She's a teenager. It's very teenage defiant. Gru, any thoughts on the integration of sign language into the landscape of this movie?
Well, I found it a little off-putting that I found it very, very convenient that the daughter, the character, was deaf, that they went into the problem of the movie already speaking sign language. It would have been more interesting to me if they actually had to sort of teach themselves to communicate under these new quote-unquote rules. So it's kind of a matter of convenience that, you know, they kind of already speak the language when everything changes and they can't talk anymore. Do you see that?
Well, I mean, while you're speaking about it, I'm thinking about the second movie, which goes back to day one, where they're already signing. So apparently, you know, the daughter, well, I don't want to get too much into the, you know, the second movie yet, but I definitely hear your point. My whole thing is, I'm thinking, if they don't sign, they got no chance against
the exactly. Like, you but know, it would have been interesting to me if they weren't so fluent in it, and they kind of maybe made some mistakes and they screwed it. You know, might have thrown some interesting little wrenches into what they were trying to do, but they were already fluent in it, so it's kind of convenient. You know what I mean? Like, the one family left is already able to speak sign language. It's just a little. Maybe it's supposed to be poetic like that. I don't know. I didn't get the message.
You bring up a good point, and we could circle back to that point later on in the podcast. What do you think about my last point before we get to creature design? The use of on-screen subtitles for sign language dialogue. At first, from the notes, they were going to just do it a little piece to kind of flavor the movie, but then they decided that they were going to add subtitles for all sign language dialogue in the film.
I would have preferred without it. I would have liked to have seen. You know, I know it's a matter of convenience for today's audiences, very impatient, and maybe I'm one of them. But I remember being a little distracted by the subtitles. I think they could have done it. They could have pulled it off without it. And I would have rather have seen it that way.
Yeah.
What do you think?
Like, I know somebody I mean, the only thing, I, you know, what, like my somebody like my brother, he has, you know, he's like legally blind in one eye. So I've told him about A Quiet Place, but he can't see the subtitles. So, mm-hmm. you know, I don't think he's really gone to see the film or watch it. I mean, I see your point. Do you feel like, maybe they felt like the, I don't know if plot's the right word, but they would, I mean, there's so much, there's exposition and dialogues that helps direct the viewer to see where they're going plot wise. They didn't have that. Perhaps it might have been like a little vague, or, you know,
I think it's a visual,
kind of flavoring it.
I think it's a visual movie. And I think they added the subtitles for the impatience of today's audiences, which is okay.
Could be.
Which is fine. If they have to do it, they have to do it. I'm just saying, you know, maybe they could have left it as like an option. Like maybe like on the streaming
like
thing.
Like choose your own adventure?
Yeah, like maybe on the streaming thing, maybe there's a thing where you could turn it off. So you could, you know, because I think they got the job done without. They could have gotten the job done, because it's like I said, it's very visual. And
you know what I say?
What?
They deserve to die. They knew when they went on that plane.
They knew what they were getting into. I say, let them crash.
GRU production designer Jeffrey Beecroft headed the creature design, and Industrial Light and Magic created the creatures, led by visual effects supervisor Scott Farrar. The director wanted the creatures to look like they had evolved to no longer need eyes and to be somewhat humanoid in nature. Farrar said that the initial creature design showed them with rhinoceros-like horns out of their faces, later redesigned. Vanity Fair reported the team immediately set about pulling references, prehistoric fish, black snakes and bats, particularly their movement patterns. Krasinski provided motion capture for the creatures. GRU, I don't know if the Death Angels, the creatures in the Quiet Place universe, as they are called, are as iconic as the Xenomorph, as you referenced from Alien, but I thought a pretty cool alien design. GRU, thoughts on the baddie alien from A Quiet Place? What did you think of the design and the presentation?
Very cool. The only problem for me is that I don't think it was necessary. I thought it would have been scarier not to see the aliens.
Like, not at all.
Like, I thought it would have been more frightening if we didn't know what we were running from. Like, that's what I thought. Like, once I saw it for the first time, I'm like, okay, I've seen it. They kind of just showed, it seemed like they showed the same things over and over again, and it didn't get more scary. It was just there. It is again.
You don't think there has to be some payoff? Now, what I'm saying to you is maybe you show the creature at the very end, but even an alien, you get a full creature shot at the end of the movie. Like, to me, if you don't show it, it reeks of budget, where you're just showing actors reacting and there's no cool payoff for the viewer to see something. Now, I'm not disagreeing with you that they could have not, you know, less is more sometimes. So I'm not disagreeing with that point, but doesn't there got to be a payoff? I mean, in the big popcorn movie with something cool?
I do see your point there, and you might be right. I remember feeling like it would have been a little bit more suspenseful if I didn't know what we were so afraid of. And maybe like Jaws, like not showing it till like three quarters of the way through the movie, but then people would compare it to Jaws. So there's really no way to win, you know. It's just make your choice and do the very best you can with it. And I think they did that. They did an excellent job. They spared that's where a lot of the money must have gone, because the creature was very well done.
Well, I would have compared it to Jaws if Emily Blunt got naked and went skinny dipping into the water.
Well, that's in the unrated version that I saw.
I think of these jokes and they just.
No, I said anyway, you didn't see the version that I saw, the scene in the bathtub. It's beautiful.
Yes.
Fantastic.
All right, crew. Let's get to the.
Imagine Krasinski. Imagine Krasinski trying to direct that scene. Hey now.
Yeah, with his wife.
Yeah.
Now, what if he calls a body double? Will she be a like annoyed or offended?
Probably.
Honey, we need this this 21-year-old to come in.
She's like, "What are you saying? You calling me fat?" Like, no, just, you know, a little cellulite on the ass. You know, we got it's the studio, honey, the studio. It's not me.
That needs to be on the extended DVD cut.
Exactly.
Grew the Abbott family. Evelyn, husband Lee, deaf teenager daughter Reagan, and younger sons Marcus and Beau. They are silently scavenging for supplies in a deserted town. They're going barefoot outdoors. They communicate in ASL. Inside a store, 4-year-old Beau gets drawn to a battery-powered space shuttle toy. Lee, the dad, takes it away due to the noise it would make. Reagan, the older sister, gives the toy to Beau, who also takes the battery his father removed and put it on the shelf. Beau activates the toy as they are walking across this bridge, alerting nearby creatures, which kill him. Gru, right off the bat, they hit you with an early character death, and a youngster, no less. You don't get a great look at the creature, but you can feel the creature's viciousness and power. Gru, thoughts on that early opening scene?
That poor kid, you know, he's dead, and then you get the title. You know, like, literally, they wipe him off the screen, and then, like, A Quiet Place. The poor kid dies before they even tell us what the name of the movie is. That's the catalyst for the whole thing, you know. So it obviously works for the plot. I'm thinking though, like even as this movie is starting, you're the only people evidently still alive, okay? And you're spending your time running from these. Wouldn't you just want to die? Like, wouldn't you just say, you know what, is there any reason for us to live like this? Like, let's just let this thing just destroy. Would you want to live by yourself in a post-apocalyptic, I don't know, is this some mental therapy I need? Because I'm sitting there
I think now I'm going to, you know, after this podcast, shave my head, put on black Nikes, and drink hemlock, and
I was thinking of. I'm like, why are they doing this when the inevitable is eventually going to happen?
You don't think the movie there's a theme? I don't even have this on my notes, but you don't think there's the theme of family and the strength and the ability to persevere when you're relying on each other in terms of family, like the connectiveness of a family unit?
It's there, but I think it probably could have been done better, and I have a theory why.
Can you hold it till
I'm gonna hold it
to the end of the movie?
Yes, I'm gonna hold it till then.
It's just gonna be
No. It's a very simple thing. But
there are some plot points I think that have been open to be criticized, which I'll get to in a second.
Okay.
So we see a year later, Evelyn is in her final stages of pregnancy. Lee is trying to make radio contact with the outside world. We see up on the roof that there are fires in the evening, which indicate perhaps other people are still alive. Lee attempts to upgrade Reagan's cochlear implant, her hearing aids, with scavenged amplifiers to restore her hearing, but the devices are ineffective. Later, he takes Marcus's son to a waterfall, which he teaches him how to fish, while Reagan visits Bow Memorial. Lee explains to Marcus that it's safe to talk when louder background noise masks their voices from the creature, such as waterfall. Marcus tells his father that Reagan blames herself for Bo's death. Gru, you mentioned some criticisms on the plot points. So here's a couple of things I would like to ask you. Question number one, why would the parents get pregnant fully knowing that having a crying baby could lead to a lot of trouble, you know, with the creatures? And I think the other plot point that I've seen online is this whole notion of ambient noise covering sound. I'm not against it, but it's tough to buy into when sound attracts the aliens, that somehow two people could have a normal conversation because they're by a waterfall. Any thoughts on, and they're definitely, the pregnancy thing has definitely been bandied about on the internet. Any thoughts on some of these plot points?
The second one there is fine. I have no problem with the waterfall thing.
Okay, good.
But the pregnancy thing makes less than zero sense. Number one, how are you going to screw silently? Number two, why would you do that? Why would you, you know, and plus without medical supplies or doctors or whatever, you're going to have a baby? Like people die giving birth. You know, what are you going for here? You know,
I mean, I would just spit in my hand and bring the baby out.
Yeah, it's definitely a plot point to make things more interesting and maybe heighten the tension. Unnecessary and too distracting because you're spending too much time asking why is she even pregnant? You know. Because it would have been one thing, because it starts on it's obvious that she got pregnant between the death of their youngest son and,
oh, you think?
Well, no. What I'm saying is it would have worked if she had been pregnant before this whole thing started, but that's not what happened. Okay.
Okay.
That would have worked, right. But this, it doesn't make sense at all.
All I have to say to your point is I like girls who are noisy. Thank you. All right. Anyway.
New You Life Center, ladies and gentlemen.
Thank you. Thank you, everybody. Alone at the house, Evelyn goes into labor. She makes her way to the basement, actually accidentally steps on an exposed nail. That was a pretty intense scene.
Yeah, but wait. Let me stop you there for a second. All this time, they're not going to realize that nail's not there?
All this time the river flows.
Come on.
I hear you. I feel like you're – I mean, that's something – you. I mean, they're putting this in here to create tension, to create scenes. I feel like you're being perhaps a bit harsh on that.
Okay. Criticism. All right. It just seemed like, oh, now they're going to realize that the Home Alone nail is still there?
You don't have basket traces.
I mean, that's right out of Macaulay Culkin putting it there for Daniel Stern to step on. And,
you
know,
you mean the comedy A Quiet Place?
What are they doing?
From the ceiling?
Yeah.
Well, she gets hurt. She flips on the red switch that changes the house lights that indicates that there's distress. She struggles to remain silent during her contractions. Obviously, Lee sees the lights. He instructs son Marcus to set off fireworks as a diversion. He finds Evelyn hiding with their newborn son, and they sneak into their improvised soundproof basement. Lee leaves to find their other children. Evelyn discovers that the basement is flooded with a broken water pipe, and there's a creature inside the flooded water. I'm not going to get into it here, but we know that water plays a major role in the second film, and I felt like they were not consistent from the first movie to the second movie.
I'll agree with that,
I'll go into it if you want me to, but I mean, that when I watched the second one, I was like, that's bullshit on this scene from the first one, knowing what I know in the second one.
Exactly. You're 100% right. But watching the first one without having seen the second one, it was almost laughable. Because it's like...
Well, why do you say that?
Because it's like, oh my God, of all things, now the pipe's going to break? Like, it was like, what else is gonna go wrong? I mean, it's that. I mean, these are the thoughts that I'm having as I'm watching this. And I'm like, wow, they're still, you know... I mean, they still have to pay a water bill even after all this? Like, the pipes are still working? Everything is still running? Like, shit would shut down eventually. I do see the inconsistency, and I'll let you take that when we get there. But you know,
Reagan and Market.
All right, go ahead.
Go ahead.
No, I was gonna say the thing with the water. It was a momentary thing. It was like, oh great, here we go. You know, and then to the movie's credit, you're already invested in the next thing to. You know, so you're not worried about the inconsistency of the ridiculousness that came before it. So
you mean Lee's not going to go? Listen, Evelyn, our Florida water and power bill is $138.
Did you pay the FPL bill this month?
You know how many gallons of water we use this month?
Conserve, recycle. What are you doing?
Reagan and Marcus take refuge on top of a grain silo. Marcus accidentally falls inside, and the broken door distracts the creature.
I didn't see that one coming. Evelyn. Did you? Oh my God.
It now targets the siblings. Reagan jumps in to save her brother, but they sink into this like corn feed and nearly suffocate. Marcus saves her, and Reagan's cochlear implant reacts to the proximity of the creature by emitting a high-frequency sound that repels the creature and hurts her ear. The children escape and reunite with their father. The creature returns woundingly while the siblings hide in a pickup truck. Marcus cries out to his father, attracting the creature. Father Lee sacrifices himself for the siblings' safety, then yells to draw the creature to him, which kills him. Reagan and Marcus put the truck in neutral. They roll down the hill to escape and reunite with the mother. Grew perhaps the penultimate scene of the movie, Father Lee sacrificing himself to the creature in order to save his children. You know, no matter what you say, it's still a very strong scene. Grew, thoughts on the death of Daddy Lee?
It was actually, that's one of the truest moments in the movie. I really did like the way that was done. It was definitely necessary. There was no other way out of that situation other than for Lee to do what he did, and it wasn't overdone. You know, it could have been ruined with like loud music and like sad stuff. It wasn't. It just, this was the next thing that happened, and the kids having to get that pickup going. This scene was very well done and necessary, and I was surprised that they had the guts to do it. Considering that Krasinski is the movie star of the movie, but it served the movie very, very well.
This scene was inspired by executive decision where Steven Seagal gets sucked out.
I love that scene. He's like, we're not going to make it. You're going to make it. Goodbye. You know, and then he's out of there. He gets sucked out of the thing. Oh, my God. I hated that. I love Seagal. I hated seeing him go like that.
I was trying to think of something funny. I think I agree with everything you said. Obviously, that scene sort of puts a rubber stamp on the relationship with the father and the oldest daughter. Obviously, that was a focus in the movie she's a teen. She rebels against her parents. In this post-apocalyptic world. And at the very end, he said, you know, I love you. I've always loved you. And, sacrifices himself to save his kids.
Yeah, all right. I said I was going to hold it. Because it could have been a little deeper than that. It wasn't. And I have my reasons why I think it was, why it wasn't. But I'll get to that when we criticize.
All right, save it. We'll ask about it at the end. Hang on 1 second. Yeah. Okay. The creature returns. Reagan, who now realizes the sound made by her implant distresses the creature, places the device on her, on the dad's microphone, amplifying the feedback. Creature is disoriented. Creature exposes the flesh beneath its armored head, allowing mom, Evelyn, to fatally shoot it. Family looks up at their CCTV monitor, showing two creatures attracted by the noise of the shotgun running over and approaching the house. With their newly acquired knowledge of the creature's weakness, Evelyn nods to Reagan, reloads, ready to take them on. It has a weakness, Gru. The creature has a weakness. Of course, every great villain does. Gru, thoughts on the high-pitched frequency doing in the Death Angel in the first Quiet Place movie?
Very creative.
Just give me that, and then we're going to go to the box office. Don't give me your whole thoughts yet, but just give me, there's the weakness. You know, Drago, he is a man. The creature can't be killed.
Very creative, and it sort of connects to, you know, the whole theme of the movie about, you know, how, I don't know how to put it, but like, the alternative to silence is the weakness of the monster. I don't know what I just said, but it was something.
It's,
it was
so deep, man.
There's something. There's some. It was a very. I would love to be like Cheech and Chong watching this movie, but there's something in the irony of it. I'm not quite sure what it is, but I'm sure if Roger Ebert were alive, he would be able to straighten it out for us. But
I think if I'm hearing you correctly, I think you make a good point. It does fit into the lore of the movie, and I guess the creature's greatest strength, in essence, becomes its greatest weakness as well. Am I sounding
Yeah. No, I like that. I like that. But
that douche on like the actor studio. Tell me your favorite curse word.
I love that guy. He's dead.
James Lipton.
I love that guy. I think what you're trying to say is, and you're absolutely right. You know, even if we can't pin it down to like a perfect metaphor or whatever, there's definitely a connection and an irony there, which works. There's a good payoff for the daughter being deaf. Where I said before, you know, that the daughter being deaf was a matter of convenience. I'm glad it pays off in the end in that way. That, you know, that's, they don't, it's like, they, it, 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 what am I trying to say?
I mean, I hear what you're
saying. She's not deaf. She's not deaf just to be deaf.
Okay, so I think I hear what you're saying, which is, your feeling is it was kind of an easy route to have the daughter be deaf. However, and I'm going to sound like a douche here. I really am, because it's not typically my position. But was it not, in a way, nice to see a deaf actress on film in a major movie? I mean,
of course it was. I mean? Like, yeah, absolutely.
You don't see that very often. And I felt like it did fit. It didn't seem too pandering. But I understand your point, and I don't disagree with
that. No, it wasn't. It seemed pandering, but I'm glad that they made it make sense, and they made it be sort of the catalyst for how they're going to fight back. So that legitimizes it for me. So, and yes, you're right. It's always good to see them being able to, you know, people with disabilities, you know, being able to give and give, she gives a terrific performance too.
Yes, and that's one to grow on. You know, Andy talks and he takes a breath, and I get ready to move, and he's like, "And there, it's not pandering, but it's a winning move." And I'm like, "Okay." He's like, "But however, felt good to see a deaf actress with a disability."
The more you know.
Gru, how did A Quiet Place do at the box office? Well, it had an opening weekend of over $50 million versus a production budget, like we said, of $17 million. And it made a total of over $350 million, $189 in this country, $350 million overall. Those numbers, any quick thoughts on those numbers?
No, that's a big, I mean, it's a great, it's a big hit. Huge, incredibly profitable, and I smell a sequel.
Grill, what was the critical response to? No, I didn't. I worked out this morning and I haven't showered yet. That's what you smell. Grill, what was the critical response to A Quiet Place? On the review aggregate website Rotten Tomatoes, the film holds an approval rating of 96% out of 378 reviews, with an average rating of 8.2 out of 10. The website's critical consensus reads, A Quiet Place artfully plays on elemental fears with a ruthlessly intelligent creature feature that's as original as it's scary and establishes director John Krasinski as a young rising talent. On Metacritic, the film has a weighted average score of 82 out of 100 based on 55 critics, indicating universal acclaim. Audience polled by CinemaScore, Grew gave the film an average grade of B+ on an A+ to F scale. Rolling Stone Peter Travers gave the film 3.5 out of 4 stars, praising the movie's exploration of themes about parenthood and saying, "This new horror classic will fry your nerves to a frazzle." Variety Owens Gleiberman said, "A Quiet Place is a taut, original, genre-bending exercise, technically sleek and accomplished, with some vivid, scary moments, though it's a little too in love with the stone logic of its own premise." Author Stephen King praised the film in a tweet saying, "A Quiet Place is an extraordinary piece of work, terrific acting, but the main thing is silence." One last one, Nick Allen of RogerEbert.com called A Quiet Place Krasinski's breakthrough as a triple threat entertainer. "It's been a long time coming. By no accident, he's tackled the horror genre while relying on the unique strength that can be seen throughout his acting work, and one that has made him relatable as an everyman across TV and film, expressive silence." Gru, the movie, the box office, the critics, the world is waiting to hear your overall final thoughts on A Quiet Place. What did you like? What did you dislike? Gru, final thoughts on the film, A Quiet Place.
Well, I like to use the old star method, so I give it 3 out of 4. I liked it very much. I have a couple qualms with it, but for the most part, it's a horror movie that is scary, and that makes it a winner. It's very rare these days to find a movie that truly is frightening, and this felt like a nightmare from the minute it started to the minute it ended. And that was a great. I mean, it was fun watching it. You know, I was eating my dark chocolate flips, and you know, I was, you know, the chocolate covered pretzels, and you know, I was like crunching them in my hand because the tension was so thick. Krasinski definitely did an incredible job directing it. Perfect sound, perfect. You know, like the only reason that it's not a perfect movie for me is, and this is what I was talking about before, I feel like, and you tell me if you feel differently, I feel like I would have liked to have known more about them, the family, you know, like I feel like the stakes would have been, I don't know if the stakes could have been any higher, but I feel like if I knew them well, if I'd lived with them for a little bit and I really cared about them as individuals beforehand, maybe I would have connected with them a little more throughout. It's like they kind of just threw, I mean, the thing starts, it says like day 89, so we're already in it when the movie starts. I just felt like there was a little something character missing from the movie, and that's why I don't give it a perfect score there. But aside from that, everything works, and it's a really good movie.
You're a more seasoned veteran movie watcher. I respect your opinion, but I disagree. I think they gave you enough family stuff in a scope of the time to make you care. I think the performances are really on point, but they give you enough family sort of deal. Look, you know, the one thing that lately these horror and science fiction movies do is they throw you right into the mix and they don't give you a lot of backstory. Now, you're going to get a little bit, or you're going to get a lot in the second movie.
Yeah.
But, you know, you don't see too much of the family. The movie starts when they're right in like you said, I think it was day 300 and something. But I think the movie, to your point, I think the movie gives you enough enough tenderness and enough background with the family that you it makes you care just a little bit more than a typical movie.
Maybe. Man, look, I've only seen it once. So, you know, maybe it's something I need to, you know, now that I know what I know, maybe I'll appreciate the other things more.
I think one viewing, you get the most sort of organic view of how you feel about a film.
Yeah.
Let me ask you one last thing before we move on to A Quiet Place 2. Evelyn cocks the rifle. The creatures are running. Did you say to yourself at the end of the movie, sequel? And I hope, did you feel like a sequel is coming? Did you want it? I'm just curious on that.
Well,
last scene.
It's a loaded question because I didn't see the movie until I knew there was already a sequel. So okay, it was, right. But with that being said,
fucking, I'll write it.
With that being said, it's a great ending, sucks. And it didn't need. And we'll get to the sequel, but it didn't really need a sequel. I love that ending. Like, we know what's going on now. The creature has a weakness. They know how to kill it. You know, cock the gun.
Oh.
Cut to black. Great ending.
So, you just said, which will open up with the second movie, John Krasinski, who co-wrote, directed, and starred in A Quiet Place, said he originally considered the first film a one-off.
Yeah.
Uncertain of finding similar success in a sequel, he initially told Paramount to seek another writer and director. The film's first screenwriters, Scott Beck and Brian Woods, did not return for the sequel. Woods said that they were not interested in a franchise approach, that they would rather try and create other original ideas. 3 months after A Quiet Place release, Krasinski decided to brainstorm ideas for a sequel. According to Krasinski, Paramount rejected pitches from other writers and directors that were considered too franchise-oriented. Interesting note. Krasinski said, I had this small idea, which was to make Millie, which was Simmons, Reagan, the older daughter, the lead of the movie. Her character opens the door to all the themes I was dealing with in the first movie. The studio invited Krasinski to write a script based on his idea. By August of 2018, Krasinski was writing the film. He wrote the draft in 3.5 weeks. In the following February, he was confirmed to direct the sequel. Gru, originally conceived as a one-off, written, directed by one of its stars. Any thoughts on sort of the comings and goings with the script of A Quiet Place 2?
Krasinski
ends up writing it himself.
Had I seen it beforehand, I would have, upon hearing this news, I would have been looking forward to it. I would have been like, okay, I'm interested to see where they're going to take this. Where are they going to go with this? So I would have definitely been interested in a sequel after seeing the movie, you know, by itself, without a doubt.
What about you? Production they did for the sequel.
Well, yeah, like you said you saw this in the movie. So
I did.
You know, so when you heard they were developing a sequel, how did you feel about it?
I was stoked. I enjoyed A Quiet Place, and I'm a sci-fi guy, and this was a franchise I was eager, hoping to mine further.
Right.
June of 2019, production began on A Quiet Place 2, 47 days of filming throughout upstate western New York. Gru, I'm not going to get to my next piece by piece, but I have a lot of notes about the delay, COVID.
Right.
John Krasinski, the director, was adamant about trying to show the film in theaters. So there was a delay of literally almost well over a year and a half before they were able to get it into the theater. I'm not going to give you all the details, but millions of dollars on the line. Anything to add about sort of the COVID era and this, a lot of these movies being postponed and delayed? Until really just a few months ago, actually.
No, I think that most of these, if not all of them, made the right decisions because they want to make the movie the way they want to make it. So for them to be able to put it off, if that's necessary to make it the way it needs to be made, then by all means do it. Of course, you're disappointed because you want to see it sooner rather than later. But you'd rather see it the way it's meant to be made rather than a half-assed version just to get it into theaters. So I applaud. I definitely applaud that decision.
Gruel, let's get to the. Hold on. The cast of A Quiet Place 2 is basically the same group of actors, except we have Cillian Murphy as Emmett, who's a friend of John Krasinski's Lee. We also have Digimon Hansu is the man on the island. Krasinski is back as Father Lee Abbott in flashback scenes. And Scoot McNairy as Marina Man. That's the new DC comic. It's going to be on. Anyway, okay.
Scoot.
Grew,
can you name one other movie that Scoot McNairy has been in?
I know Scoot was in Narcos, one of the Narcos series on Netflix. I know Scoot McNairy, and I can't effing think of. I definitely know the guy. He's been on Stern. He called into the Stern show one time, and I just, for the life of me, I cannot think of a movie, but I know he's a pretty decently well-known actor.
He was in Argo. You remember Argo?
Yes.
He was like that dick, the guy, the, you know, like one of the prisoners who like wouldn't trust Ben Affleck. Like he was that douche.
Argo was a great sci-fi fantasy film. Really, great fantasy film. Anyway. I want to see. Forget it. Gru, we're going to open up to day one during a baseball game. The Abbott family, wife Evelyn, husband Lee, deaf daughter Reagan, and sons Marcus and Beau, and other spectators witness a strange cloud-like object hurtling towards the Earth. Moments later, hostile extraterrestrial creatures attack and begin slaughtering people. The blind creatures possess armored skin, have extraordinary speed and strength, and track victims with hypersensitive hearing, attacking anything that makes a noise. Gru fans wanted to see it. They wanted to see what day one looked like. Gru, thoughts on the big flashback to the day that changed it all. Day one, the Death Angels arrive on planet Earth.
Wasn't into it. I wanted to, when I talked Whoa. About, no, I didn't need to see when it happened. I wanted to see something before. I wanted to be able to know the family a little bit more.
But, Carl, were you expecting like extended scenes of what? The family on a vacation? I mean, what are you looking for?
I don't know. Here? Maybe. I don't know. They gave you enough in this opening passage.
I don't know. Well, F you. I don't know.
I don't know. If I knew, I'd be writing it instead of talking about it. But if they gave you enough. Where you see that he's not as attentive a parent as you would think he should be, like he's missing the baseball game, he's late for the baseball game.
All right,
I don't know. There was a little bit of subtext there, but then it gets drowned out. You know, like right away, you know, they see, you know, he goes into the. Into the convenience store, picks up some apples for the game or something, and the guy's watching it on TV. So you see this thing is already coming. I got like shades of like Terminator 2 in that like short little moment before Judgment Day. I think I would have liked a little bit more build up to that. Maybe almost like.
But you
go ahead.
But you said you didn't need it. Or you weren't
That's because that's all they gave us. I would have liked to have seen the stakes a little bit higher going into the apocalypse. You know, so if they're going to show us a little prequel, give us some family dynamic. Give us something to lose from the whole thing. But
yeah,
but you know what?
I don't.
On the other hand, I know, you know, you want to get right into the he's sucking his thumb.
Let me drink some black coffee.
Yeah. No, you want to get right into the action.
No.
Everybody knows what's going on. So
I'm being goofy, but I don't know. I feel like you're being very particular here. Let me get to your point about you don't need it. I mean, you don't think that the fans. I mean, I was almost thinking with your logic, let's not show how Darth Vader originated. Like, I kind of hear what you're saying, but you don't think there was interest among the fans to see what does that first day look like when the aliens come onto Earth. Now, I felt like it could have been maybe perhaps a little bigger and bolder, but A Quiet Place is sort of a quiet movie. It sort of gives you that homespun, little upstate New York kind of folksy feel.
Maybe among the fans. I'm talking about me. I was already invested in the whole thing. I didn't need to see that. I didn't really care how it happened. We just know that these aliens have invaded Earth and sort of taken over. Didn't need to
see. You didn't think you got some cool visuals? Like, the one runs into the cop car, the one with the bus when she has to brake and drive backwards.
You want to know what I was thinking when that was happening? I was like, all right, now the movie has a budget. And they need to spend some money. Like, it wasn't bad. It was just, it's not what I would have done.
Okay.
It's not what I would have done.
The Abbott's home is destroyed by a fire at the end of the first movie, so the family searches for other survivors. Entering a fenced-off area, Evelyn accidentally sets off a sound alarm. There was some bells on the mm-hmm. fence, alerting the creatures. As they flee, Marcus steps into a bear trap, attracting a creature with his screams. Reagan and Evelyn kill it, free Marcus, then run into an abandoned steel foundry. They find their old friend Emmett and takes them into a soundproof underground hideout. Emmett, who recently lost his family, refuses to help further and says they cannot stay. Noah Jupe's Marcus's leg gets obliterated in a bear trap. Cillian Murphy's Emmett is friendly but tells the Abbott family, you gotta go. Gruth, any thoughts on the early plot direction of the movie now? Yeah. It's going to take us up to current time.
Yeah, why would he tell them, if you're trying to survive, like, you need some compadres, you need some help. Like, why
do you?
I wouldn't want to be alone in there, especially Emily Blunt coming in. Be like, all right, here we go.
All right, your joke about Emily Blunt is appreciated notwithstanding. Is there some kind of feeling in this post-apocalyptic world in which sound is at a premium, bringing in a family with a youngster that's going to cry? I mean, I thought that's where he was kind of going with it.
Oh, he was definitely. Nice guy, and I think I agree. And when we meet him in the beginning at the baseball game, you can almost telegraph that he's going to be that kind of guy. So it works. It works. I'm fishing for.
No, no, no. I want to throw my position at you. No, it's good stuff. I want to hear your thoughts on a movie. Keep it going.
It works.
Marcus hears the song Beyond the Sea playing on the radio, which Emmett says has aired continuously for 4 months. Reagan determines that it is a hint. All right, maybe this is where it gets a little that the survivors are on a nearby island. She theorizes that if she can reach the radio tower, the hearing aid's high-frequency noise can be broadcast so other survivors can weaponize the signal. She ventures out. She leaves. She leaves to find the island. The mother begs Emmett, please, you got to find my daughter Reagan and help her. She's out, in this wasteland with creatures. Reagan persuades Emmett to help complete her mission. I know it was a little jointed here, but perhaps grew the turning point of the movie as Reagan now really moves to the forefront of the movie. She becomes, in my mind, sort of the action star, so to speak. A very tense scene in an abandoned train where Emmett comes to her rescue. Reagan and Emmett later venture out. I have sort of the theme changes here in this movie, but let me throw it to you first. Reagan leaves, Emmett follows and helps her. Abandoned train, crazy scene with the creatures. Give me your thoughts.
Yeah, it's now becoming more of an action sci-fi than a horror movie, which I guess is okay, but it's what I missed from the first one, because it wasn't really scary anymore. It was more of a roller coaster ride. I have one question about Emmett, though. Like, when we first see him after the apocalypse, we see his visual through the rifle. Has he figured out the weakness? Like, how has he survived all this time? Has he figured out their weakness as well?
That's a good question.
That was missing, wasn't it?
That was a good question. One that I don't have an answer for. I don't. Again, I think it ties back to the first movie where you see the fires, so you know people have survived. And that's perhaps where they could take the franchise, which we'll talk about.
But what's he doing with the gun if it doesn't do any good, unless you know that it's this frequency thing that that draws their... brings them out of their shell.
I don't know. I still would have a gun anyway, but...
True.
I don't know. All right. Evelyn leaves Marcus and her newborn baby at the foundry to fetch medical supplies in the town. Marcus discovers the corpse of Emmett's wife. Startled and scared, he alerts the creature and accidentally locks himself and the baby inside an airtight compartment. Meanwhile, Emmett and Reagan arrive at a marina to board a boat to the island. They're attacked, grew by feral humans. And Emmett deliberately creates noise and attracts creatures that slaughter the attackers. When one creature drowns, Emmett realizes that the creatures cannot swim. The two row to the island, where a small colony of survivors are living normally. The colony leader reveals that the U.S. government discovered that the creatures were unable to swim. The U.S. National Guard attempted to move as many people as possible to the islands, though only two boats made it. Gru, some big plot twists here. Some folks online have had a bit of a problem with the latter. We got feral humans. We got death angels that can't stand water. What is this, M. Night Shyamalan Signs?
I was thinking it sounded like more like, like Escape from New York.
Are you talking about like the feral humans? I don't know. Or
just like the
water?
just like all these, just like, I don't know. It just had that feeling to me. It became an adventure. Like now it's like Jurassic Park. I can see your point. Does that make sense?
What did you think? I mean, again, I think these scenes, again, it's going to give you that. The humans are perhaps worse monsters than the monsters. I think that's
getting very messagey, very preachy. It's still exciting, it's still fun, but I think all this plot is losing something.
Yeah, I have a problem with the water thing because I don't think it's consistent with the first movie. So,
right.
The first movie, you clearly see an alien in water. When you have the pipes leaking and it's stalking Evelyn, the mom, and the...
To be fair, it's not an ocean's worth of water, but...
Okay, but still, I hear what you're saying, but it was pretty high up.
Yeah.
I don't know. I felt like it wasn't... There was a major plot point here, a major inconsistency.
I would call it an inconsistency that should have been dealt with, that wasn't. Maybe they just thought they could kind of skate over it, but it didn't get past us.
No, I hear your point though. I like your line about Jurassic Park. It is getting I think the theme switches here because the theme I think of the first movie is or one of the themes is parents as protectors of children.
Right.
In the second movie, children grow up and they begin to protect their parents. That's kind of what I take from Reagan and somewhat even Marcus at the end, which we'll get to at the end of the movie. I think there's a shift from parents protect the kids. In the second movie, kids get older, and now they protect the older parents. I don't know.
I could buy that. I like it. It works.
Gee, thank you.
It doesn't work.
Maybe I didn't work for hard.
No.
Maybe I don't have.
No, you did not.
Yes, that's right.
I think that it doesn't. I think that the message of the parents protecting the children works better with the first one than that second message works with this one. That's what I think.
Fair enough. Evelyn returns to the foundry. She frees the children before they suffocate. The three hide inside the bunker as the alien prowls the foundry. Meanwhile, on the island, a creature aboard a boat drifts to the island and begins to attack the colonists. It kills the colony leader while Emmett and Reagan run into the radio station. 66 WNBC. Reagan transmit the high frequency through the room speakers, incapacitating the creature, and Reagan finally kills it, impales it in its exposed head with a rod. Meanwhile, at the foundry, the creature discovers the family. It kind of wedges them in inside this little hallway, so to speak, and Marcus picks up Reagan's transmission over the radio. Does like a hold, like a John Cusack holds the radio up and
yeah.
plays the transmission.
Ah, that's exactly the visual that I got.
Yeah, and then creature gets all disoriented, and Marcus picks up the gun, shoots the creature dead. And
they lived happily ever after.
Well, I don't know. I'm not ending with any momentum, but you know, essentially, A Quiet Place 2 ends with the two children killing two different Death Angel creatures. Gru, what'd you think of the ending?
Well, I think it's definitely an exciting ending, but it doesn't really end any differently than the first one. They have a weakness. They expose the weakness. They kill two of what are apparently hundreds of thousands of these things. So where are we now? We're pretty much in the same spot.
I think, you know, at the end, so in the first one, she discovers a weakness and she has a small sample. In the second one, she continues to research this weakness, and now with the radio station, she has the ability to share this weakness with everybody else. And so now everybody can sort of be on the offensive. That's what I took from it.
And now we get to see who else is out there in the world, not just upstate New York, but maybe there are other survivors, like colonies like this one. But this is where it gets to be like Jurassic Park crossed with aliens. You know what I mean? You of all people would have thought that.
I won't be as critical.
It's not a critical. It's not a criticism. It's just an observation. I'm not saying it as a bad thing. I'm saying it. That's the vibe I get.
Yeah, I'm not going to give you. I'm going to wait till I go over the critical. So I'll give you my final thoughts on the film.
Okay.
With the ending, I felt satisfied, and I'll only share this. I thought the two movies were both very sound quality, but I've been consistent in my movie viewing. I usually like the original just a hair better, and I did enjoy the original again just a hair better.
I agree.
I just feel like the original is richer in content, and I agree with that, though I thought the second one did a very, very good showing as well. And we'll give our more fleshed out response when we get to the critical deal. Grew the box office for A Quiet Place 2. Well, this one was a little bit different because in February of 2021, Paramount announced that the A Quiet Place 2 would become available on its streaming service, Paramount Plus, 45 days after its theatrical release. Deadline Hollywood reported that it's a clear sign that Paramount is committed to a theatrical opening, but still open to the future of streaming. A Quiet Place 2 grew was the first of the pandemic era, whatever that means, to surpass $100 million in U.S. ticket sales. A Quiet Place 2 generated $191.7 million domestic box office and another $80 million internationally against a $61 million budget.
What was the release date for it?
Excuse me?
What was the release date? The theatrical release date?
Oh, I got to go back.
It was during the pandemic, right?
Towards the end of it, in January 2021, postponed to, so I believe it was September 17th, 2021.
All right, that's a huge take. I would say, under normal circumstances, double that.
Huge.
Double
it, triple it, double it.
Yeah, I would say double that on a, because people still aren't going to the movies like they used to. So for a movie to make that kind of money in this day and age, that's a lot of money. That's a huge hit.
Box office aside, do you think – I'll take a mini take here, my friend. God, I am so hungry. But do you think – I mean, do you think that this kind of combined streaming box office release. We talked about it a little bit in the last podcast on the end of Summer Spectacular, which did some decent numbers for the old Moody and Gru podcast.
Nice.
Do you think that this is perhaps the way to go, or you still think movies, if we ever get sound footing, is still going to be, you know, box office driven? You see,
movies will come back, and that is from personal experience, because I went to the movies a couple times over the summer, and I forgot like that it's still more fun. And I mean, for certain movies, I think the movies you're going to see in the theaters are the tentpole ones, the franchise ones, the big budget ones. You're not going to see, you know, the smaller, you know, the Marriage Story type movies. Those are going to go to streaming. But, you know, going to the movies is still a fun experience, and I think it will come back to, maybe not to exactly where it was, but it'll climb back. I'm already looking forward to seeing certain movies in the theater. I'm going to see Beverly Hills Cop 4 in the theater. I'm going to see Ghostbusters in the theater. You know,
you gave us the whole thing last podcast.
Oh yeah, I forgot.
Basically, Gru wants to see all the films from 84. No. You know, I had a point, and I just,
well, about going to the movies. What do you think? Do you think it'll ever be what it was? I mean, movie theaters will probably have to up the ante a little bit.
Well, here was my joke. I was like, you mean you're not going to see the Wes Anderson art film at the Regal Jumbotron?
I actually probably would.
No, I'm not saying you. I'm saying because you said. I think I do agree with you. I think. Well, here's what I say. Things are evolving, and I think that there'll be a point, the Uberization of society, in which people want it now and in the comfort of their home. I'm not saying that people won't look for the cinema experience. I think probably you're going to see a franchising of movies in the sense of Walmartization. So the strongest will survive. They will be in the theaters only. And I think you'll see some kind of component for streaming.
Wasn't that happening anyway, though, before the pandemic?
I don't know. I mean, maybe. You might be right. I don't look into it.
I mean, that whole Netflix Irishman thing kind of started this whole debate. Remember? They were making the Irishman for like $150, $200 million. And
well, actually, I would. First of all, Irishman was a big effing disappointment. Number one, number two.
I loved it.
I think. Oh, come on, that's just because
I did,
Mark. I'll take a breath. Wash over me. I think it started to happen, Gru, when actors looked at, like, when Sandler signed a big money deal with Netflix, and that's going back a bunch of years now. Because the thing about it is, you know, we talked about this on the podcast. A guy like Sandler got signed for hundreds of millions and didn't have to worry about box office.
Right.
Do his films, put it on, and so I think there's going to be, even if we get out of this at some point, quote unquote, completely, and I don't think we ever will. There's just too much out there in the air that there'll always be something hanging around. But I think that there'll be. I don't disagree that in cinema experience won't expand. But I think there will, you know.
Well,
like when the market crashed and airlines started charging for bags, and then they said, well, we won't charge if we could, you know, tough out these tough times. My dad was like, bullshit, they'll still charge. And they still hit. So I think once we get used to a new norm, that's the way it's going to be. And I think, you know, you'll see an app to watch movies in your home, streaming, and it may not be cheap, but you'll be able to do it.
Yeah, well, here's my response to that. One thing I do miss, the experience of seeing a really great movie in the theater, the lights going up and walking out, like, talking to whoever you're with, like, that was amazing. Like, I miss that part of it, and I'm trying to think of a movie that I've seen in the last maybe 2 or 3 years at home that I might have seen in the theater if I chose to, where I had that feeling where I really saw something truly spectacular. And the only one I came up with is the movie, The Trial of the Chicago 7. Did you see that? It was, I think it was an HBO Max movie. What? It's a great movie.
No. First of all, it's probably not. But number two,
it really is.
About popcorn? No, it's not. Popcorn movies. Forget about quality. But I would have liked to have seen Godzilla vs. Kong in like IMAX in a theater.
Yes.
I would have
yes.
liked to have seen the Suicide Squad in a theater. But you know, I saw it at home and I enjoyed the movies. But
why didn't you though? Because they're out in the theater. Why didn't you go see?
Because probably I'm lazy. I mean, it was in streaming. I clicked a button and it was on my.
You're
TV
right. It's you're right. It is tough to.
I got a nice sound bar. I got a nice sound bar now, so the sound's not bad. But yeah I mean, could Godzilla of Kong been, you know, quality aside, could it have been just much more impressive in the theater with, you know, on a big screen? Sure, but I mean, I don't know.
And you know, you could do and look, it's much more gentlemanly to get a hand job in your living room rather than a public movie theater, you know?
Yes. Up next week, the Paul Rubens story.
Yeah.
What was the critical response to A Quiet Place 2? Quiet Place 2 received mostly positive reviews from film critics. The film review aggregator website Rotten Tomatoes reported, their first reviews are out, mostly positive on both fronts, even if not all of them agree on the sequel being at least as good as the original. They got 355 reviews, that's Rotten Tomatoes, that is, determined 91% of them to be positive, grew with an average rating of 7.5 out of 10. The website's critics' consensus reads, a nerve-wracking continuation of its predecessor, A Quiet Place 2 expands the terrifying world of the franchise without losing track of its heart. A review aggregate website, Metacritic, we've talked about them a lot, the film received generally favorable reviews, with a weighted score of 71 out of 100 based on 56 critics. Audience polled by CinemaScore Group gave the film an average grade of A- on an A+ to F scale. Jeanette Katsoulis of the New York Times gave the film a positive review, stating, while the new installment is like its predecessor, wonderfully acted and intuitively directed by John Krasinski, who was solely responsible for the story this time around, it also largely replaces the hushed horror of the original with full-on action, as Gru has already referenced. Justin Chang of NPR said, A Quiet Place Part 2 is unexpectedly resonant film for the present moment as this country slowly emerges from a crisis that, while surely is less terrifying than an alien apocalypse, has revealed humanity at its best and its worst. Bloody Disgusting gave the film 3.5 out of 5 stars, calling it a satisfying, worthwhile sequel. And finally, Nick Allen of RogerEbert.com gave the film 3 out of 4 stars, criticizing Krasinski for not taking risks, but praising its incredibly robust and kinetic action scenes. Gru, the world is waiting with bated breath. Andrew Gruthius, final thoughts on the sequel, A Quiet Place 2.
Again, I give it the same rating as the first one. I give it 3 out of 4. I think I enjoyed the first one more, but I think the second one is just as good of a movie, if that makes sense.
It does.
I think it's good for what it is. It's not, to me, it's not a horror movie. The first one was. This is more of an action sci-fi adventure. And on that front, it delivers. It's exciting. It's never boring, where it could have been. I like the new characters. I like it's definitely inventive. It takes familiar tropes like, you know, that colony and like the, you know, the lone ranger kind of guy, Cillian Murphy, Emmett, his character, and it sort of does new and exciting things with them. Krasinski does a great job as now an action director. So he's definitely proved his worth there. So it's a good sequel. I enjoyed the first one more, but this one is just as good of a movie. For different reasons. So I really did enjoy it.
Trope, Cillian Murphy, Emmett, Men Out of Water,
It's a very nebulous review.
No, I liked A Quiet Place too. I left the theater feeling satisfied, but as I said,
did you see it in the theater?
I did.
Okay, good.
I did. I think this was the first movie I think I went back to after COVID schmovid. So I left very satisfied. I left wanting to see more, but I did think that the original was a hair on this bald head better. I did think the first one was a little bit more of a complete film. I don't disagree with all of your criticisms. I won't go full action Jurassic Parky. I see where you're going with it. I think it is a little more action oriented, but you got some action elements in the first one. But to sum it up, I really liked A Quiet Place 2. It's a very, very solid sequel, where in this day and age you don't see very solid sequels. Yes. So I'll leave it at that.
Do we get A Quiet Place 3?
Gru, here's what Krasinski had to say.
Oh.
It's interesting. I generally hadn't thought about a second one when I was doing the first one. However, I really had these questions while I was doing it. I put the fires out in the distance in the first one, and I always thought to myself, would it be cool if we got to explore where those fires led to? Who's on the other end of those fires? But I never thought that there would be a sequel. So when I actually came around to writing the sequel, I started with the fires. And so this time, I think when my brain started wandering about questions of what would this mean later on, I started to write down notes in case I could prepare myself for a third one. Here's what we know. The third one will not be directed by John Krasinski. They've already announced it. It's a new director. So let me ask you, Gru, if there's a sequel, what would you like to see perhaps? There will be a sequel. They've already announced it. It will be a new director, so we're going to get perhaps a new vision with the director. So knowing that, your thoughts on what I told you, and if there's a sequel, what might you like to see out of A Quiet Place 3? I have some thoughts myself.
I guess I'd like to see where they're like them branch out and you know, see what else is out there in the country and maybe the world. You know, make it bigger. If we're going for it, make it bigger. See how other areas have handled this, other survivors. Why are you laughing?
I'm just thinking A Quiet Place 3, bigger.
Yeah, better. Better. Yeah, you know what? Might as well go for it.
Okay.
I'm not sure what I'd like to see. Just I know I'd like to see it expand from where it is.
So I think clearly there is a vision to expand the Quiet Place universe. Now, here's my thoughts or my question to you, which would be certainly they've talked about expanding the universe to other families or other situations. However, would it hurt the film product if they moved away from the Abbott family? Meaning, you've got so much invested in this family. Now, I have read that perhaps there could be television or streaming series or something that would expand the universe beyond the Abbott family. If they did that in the film universe, would that hurt? Because, I mean, the one thing I've read is I did read an article where they said if you move beyond the Abbott family, that's going to kill the franchise. There's so much invested in the franchise with the family. Just let me hear your thoughts on what
you
I just
need.
Told
you. It's very simple. You need to have some kind of closure with the Abbotts. You need to see where they're going to end up, what life is going to be. You know, whether they eventually succumb to this thing, or do they find a place of their own where they could live comfortably, or at least survive and not have to keep roaming around and trying to kill these things. You know, you need their story to end before you begin somebody else's. That's my feeling about it.
So do you think the third one would you, if you were the head guy in charge, would you wrap up the Abbott family story and perhaps look to future films to expand the universe?
Yeah. I would say you make the Abbott trilogy, you know, and somehow end their story, however you want to end it. And then open it up to spin-offs or, you know, because there's a lot of different places you can go with this, you know. So you might as well explore it as long as there's interest, but you really can't leave the Abbotts hanging. Not for us,
well,
anyway.
Gru, that's it for me on A Quiet Place universe. Man, I hate how we end. We never end with momentum. It's just like,
you end when you hear your stomach growling.
Well, I am hungry, but let's end with this on A Quiet Place.
Okay.
Andrew Gruthius is the director. Are you finishing up with the Abbotts, or are you taking this to expanding? Let's just focus on
finishing with the Abbotts.
Okay. All right.
I gotta finish the Abbotts.
Okay.
Yeah.
And would we see a nip slip with Evelyn in Quiet Place 3 if you were directing?
I was looking very hard and deep, and I could not find. So I think we go the R-rated version, and for number 3, we get there. I think it's time.
Yes. Soft core, A Quiet Place 3.
Yeah, exactly. Anyway. Exactly. I mean, they have needs. They have urges. You know, I mean,
That is true. We definitely talked about it. Andrew, I'm done. I'm exhausted. You want to take us out?
And until then, Evan, my dear friend, I am looking forward to taking this stroll down memory lane. So until then,
it
will be. So until then, 1, 2, 3.
F-bomb. Quack, quack. I'm missing the morning time.